This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. The technology gods tried to keep us away, but their efforts were in vain. We're here. We're live. We're taking you into the weekend right now. We've got a tremendous menu in store for you tonight. What's on tap? We're going to start with deep dives into the NBA playoffs. Things are heating up on the hardwood. We're going to talk with Jackie Spiegel, deputy editor from Sporting News and a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association, as we also look to the latest action on the ice. We're going to talk about Stephon Gilmore's contract situation and the latest news on that front. And of course, you know that if you've been with me on these Friday night shows, that I like to look ahead for what's next for some of these NBA teams who either have been bounced or didn't make the playoffs, the play-in tournament. Bottom line, their season's over. What's to come? What can they do this summer? And so up on tonight's agenda, the New York Knicks. Where do they go from here? We're going to do a gambling corner to help put more money in your pockets and your bank accounts with Connor Mack, a sports handicapper from Pub Sports Radio. We're going to talk about the latest MLB scandal, the drama that is heating up with Michael Bradburn from The Score. We've got all that for you and more, but like I said, we start on the hardwood. Right now, Game 3, Sixers and Hawks, Philly on top, 38-30, early in the second quarter. I think whoever wins tonight's game is going to win the series. And I have been steadfast that the Sixers are the better team, and unless a caveat happens, like an injury to Joel Embiid, for instance, we know he's playing through a small meniscus tear in his knee. Unless something like that happens to tip the scales, then I just remain convinced that the Sixers are moving on. And so, like I said, whoever wins tonight, I think they advance from this matchup. And clearly, I'm predicting it's going to be Philadelphia. So we have this tendency, and we know it's coming, and then it happens, and we can't help ourselves, to overreact to game ones of a series, especially when the underdog comes in as the road team and beats their opponent at home in their own gym. And usually when that happens, or at least a lot of times, it tends to be a blowout. And that just makes it even easier for us to run with the idea that, well, maybe there's an upset brewing. But typically, that's not how it plays out. The example that comes to mind for me is in the second round in 2019, when the Celtics came into top-seeded Milwaukee's house, and they blew them out in game one. And Paul Pierce tweeted out, "This series is over." And that was one of the many takes that Paul Pierce, the analyst, did not get right. I don't think the Celtics won another game after that point. The Bucks proceeded to just steamroll them. And it's not always where it plays out in that nature, but typically, even with a game one blowout, even when it's the road team who gets that victory, it doesn't end with them advancing out of the series. It's best of seven, and unless there's something like an injury, for example, when Derrick Rose went down, the favorite is going to win. It's just, it's too hard to overcome that and win four times when you're not as talented as your opponent. Certainly there's caveats, because the Lakers, for example, in 2004 had more talent on their roster than the Detroit Pistons that year. That's one of those anomaly championships, but there were clearly some external factors there that held back the Lakers, and credit Detroit. They put Shaquille O'Neal in the pick and roll relentlessly and just picked him apart defensively, and they nearly swept him. It took a heroic performance from Kobe Bryant late in game two to avoid the brooms getting broken out on Los Angeles' quest for a four-peat. And so when it comes to those adjustments, the series is about counterpunches that Philadelphia made in game two that just reinforces to me that they're the better team and they should win this series, is that they went from Danny Green, who actually got hurt and headed to the locker room earlier in this game tonight. But in game one, he was the one who primarily covered Trae Young. And in game two, they said, that didn't work out. Trae dropped 35 on us. Ben Simmons, you're up. Which really, they should have done from the start. But maybe they were preserving him because they can, because they should win this series. Who knows? Maybe it was just a mistake on Doc Rivers' part. But they put Ben Simmons on Trae Young most of the time in game two. they tell Simmons, take away his airspace. As soon as he crosses half court, get on him. If they set screens to free him up, we're going to switch. We can't give him real estate to create off the dribble, especially if it's going to be for a three. And so as a result, they suffocated Trae Young, who went 1-for-7 from beyond the arc in game two. Thibel was on him even more in that game. They just relentlessly threw their length and athleticism that they have on the perimeter at Trae Young, and it really stifled him, and thus Atlanta's offense as a collective suffered. And so as a team, the trickle-down effect when you cut off the head of the snake is that the Hawks took 21 less threes in game two. That's one more than they made in the series opener. And the other thing that killed the Sixers in the series opener is that they had 19 turnovers in that loss. They had 7 in game two's win. There was a clip in the first half of game one. They come back. They give us the Wired for Sound. Doc Rivers talking to the huddle. And he says, guys, we're playing way too sloppy. We have to cut down on the turnovers. And what happens next is 3 straight turnovers by Philadelphia. So they didn't get the message immediately, but it had some time to marinate. I think more than anything, that game one blowout, as much as I credit the Hawks for how well they've played this postseason, and look, coming into tonight's game, they're 31-11 since getting Bogdan Bogdanovic back in the regular season. And Nate McMillan has been tremendous. He's clearly going to be the long-term coach there, as he should be, deservedly so. But I think more than anything, game one is a product of the Sixers taking on a Washington Wizards team that couldn't challenge them. I know they didn't get swept, but if you watch that series, it was evident. Even if you didn't, you can just look at the tail of the tape, and one side's not nearly talented enough to stack up and be able to challenge Philadelphia, and they didn't. And so the Sixers came in, not really battle-tested or playoff-ready, even though it's already underway. Game one, they get their doors blown off, and they know, okay, we've got a real opponent here. It's time to snap out of this. They did in game two. And now in game three, we'll see what happens. They're up by 9 at the moment. Like I said, I think they roll. And another guy who I want to give a shout out to from game two is Shake Milton, because he was the catalyst for that second half run Philly went on, where Kevin Huerter was putting up big numbers for the Hawks, and it looked like, wow, maybe they will go up 2-0. And that would have me reevaluating my stance. I wouldn't change it. I'm that stubborn, but I would think more critically about it. And maybe as much credit as I'm giving the Hawks, it's still not enough. But Shake Milton erupted in the second half, 14 points. He went 4-for-5 from three. That got the crowd reinvigorated, and that just set Philadelphia on course to close out that game. So he was fantastic for them. We know that he's streaky. Sometimes he's got it like that. Sometimes he doesn't. And luckily for the Sixers, in game two, he had it going. So I remain convinced that Philly will win this series. But another takeaway, and our producer, Jack McGraw, has heard me talk about this a number of times, is that I look towards what are some sleeper destinations for superstars looking to take their talents elsewhere. And Atlanta as a city certainly checks that box. Top 10 market, great city. It's a place where people hang out during the offseason. I think that they certainly, as a city, can attract talent. And the reason they haven't for so long is because the Hawks haven't been good enough. And even when they had the successful Al Horford, Joe Johnson years during the Mike Budenholzer era, the cap was clogged and it just wasn't going to play out that way, where all of a sudden they're the franchise landing star free agents or players looking to force their way out in a trade. It wasn't realistic at that time, even though they were a very good team, one that won 60 games one regular season. The question now, as they get better and better on the fly here, once they made the coaching change and tapped Nate McMillan in to replace Lloyd Pierce, is whether stars would want to go play with Trae Young, who's ball dominant. And what we're seeing is a burgeoning star, someone who's making the necessary adjustments by getting the ball out of his hands faster, trusting his teammates, who they're all role players. Clint Capella, Bogdanovic, all of these guys are having fantastic seasons, but role players nonetheless, not all stars.
Not to mention, you could also get rid of Danilo Gallinari's contract, and you can sign yourself a max player.
Look at my guy Jack pulling out the contractual information. I love to see it. And so, like he said, they can clear out the necessary cap space. They all of a sudden are looking like a viable destination, and you've got to wonder, are stars taking note of the adjustments to Trae Young's game as he starts to elevate himself to that next tier of burgeoning young superstars. We're seeing so many throughout the playoffs. Jason Tatum dropped 50 against the Brooklyn Nets in the first round. Donovan Mitchell, who we're going to get to in a little bit, has been fantastic and made those Dwayne Wade comparisons that have been there since he came out of Louisville more and more evident. So you've got to wonder, are stars watching how Trae Young and the Atlanta Hawks are playing right now and thinking, yeah, I can see myself teaming up with him all of a sudden, where last year, that guy just has the ball in his hands too much. I don't see him, even though he's an elite passer, really making his teammates better, but that is not the case this year, far from it. So I wonder if some of those players that we're also going to get to, the Damian Lillards, the Bradley Beals of the world, for example, perhaps some other stars whose names we're not even thinking of at the moment, that they want to go take their talents to the A and team up with Trae Young. As for the other matchup that takes place tonight, the Suns and the Nuggets. And I guess I'll start with a sour note, because Denver, to me, had as good of a chance as any team in the West to knock off a healthy Los Angeles Lakers squad. They made the move at the deadline to go get Aaron Gordon. There's a lot of instances where that piece at the deadline helps to put a team over the top in any sport. Let's expand beyond the NBA when we say that for sure. And so that's the type of move where you start thinking about the championship DVD and looking back on a situation, reverse engineering it, if you will. And I loved the move, but unfortunately for them, as we all know, Jamal Murray tears his ACL at the end of a game that was already decided out in the Bay against the Golden State Warriors. And as if that wasn't bad enough, no Will Barton for a while. He just came back in game two. No PJ Dozier. Michael Porter Jr., who we know, the only reason he fell to the Nuggets late in the lottery is that he was dealing with a number of injuries and teams were concerned about the medicals. He got red flagged by most franchises. He's got the back injury flaring up on him now. So it's really unfortunate that this team that could give us a great series that legitimately could have gone on to win the title is just decimated by injuries and ill-equipped to do so. I don't see them holding up against the Suns in this series, and Michael Malone knows it because after both games, he's called his team out and said that they quit, and he called them soft. And the reason for that, and he's absolutely right, by the way, the reason that happened is because I think that they were feeling sorry for themselves, understandably so, given the context I just laid out for you. So I it's a shame that this is the reality for the Denver Nuggets. I think they're going to come out firing tonight. It wouldn't even surprise me if it's a blowout, depending on how the Suns handle it. Maybe even that gets them reinvigorated. Maybe they make the series 2-2, and then we'll see what happens when it heads back to the desert. But I also wouldn't be surprised if Phoenix, who's so talented, and I want to get into them now, is able to withstand that initial punch from the Nuggets and deliver a stronger counterstrike. And so when it comes to Phoenix, especially when they're at home and they're rolling, that's been my favorite crowd in the playoffs. And I get it with, you would think, MSG, with them finally back in the postseason and how electric that atmosphere was at Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena. But, you know, the Knicks, look, their fans are celebrating and going crazy while they're the winning games in the regular season to clinch the fourth seed in the East, the less talented of the two conferences. So it's certainly not like they haven't been underdogs in their own right and don't appreciate what this team is doing this season, or it did, but there's more of a genuine underdog sense when it comes to the Suns and that fan base, because it's not New York City. It's not the number one media market in the country. So look, Phoenix is another spot that I think is a sleeper when it comes to attracting stars. And when Chris Paul's contract comes to an end, I'll bet you that there are great players lining up to join Devin Booker in Phoenix. But as far as a fan base goes, I think that they more fit the true description of an underdog, despite the tail of the tape being ugly for certainly the last 20 years for the Knicks. It's just, it's different when it's the Suns. And I think that's the energy that comes from them watching their team just steamroll opponents at times, including the Lakers, where they're just not accustomed to it. And so it's fun to watch, and it's easy. You can feel that energy through your television. Again, the same applies to Knicks fans. I think there's just a different sense of where that energy comes from for Phoenix Suns fans. And so I've thoroughly enjoyed watching them. People want to label them the favorites in the West. I don't think the West has a favorite right now, to be candid with you all. And so the Suns certainly, that means it's there for the taking for them. You look at Mikal Bridges, he had a game-high 23 points in the series opener. The Suns do a fantastic job generating open threes. He's the recipient of a bunch of them. Jay Crowder's often been the beneficiary of those. Him and Torrey Craig give them bigger wing defenders for when they have to match up with LeBron or Aaron Gordon, or if they face the Clippers next round. They can have confidence in the different looks they're throwing at Kawhi. So I love how dynamic this team is on both ends of the floor, and DeAndre Ayton is starting to typify that. He's averaging 16.3 points per game in the postseason. That's the second most on the team. He's also given them 10.5 rebounds per contest. He was great against the Lakers. He played Jokic, the MVP, to a wash in Game 1 of this series. He had 20 points and 10 rebounds. Joker had 22 points, 9 boards. So he's starting to play like that third star that Phoenix needs and stepping up. So this has been a coming-out party for DeAndre Ayton as well, like it has been for a number of young, talented players across the league. And then, especially with him being a third star on a team that has, an elite role player like Mikal Bridges, that's why Phoenix, you've got to buy into their chances to come out of the Western Conference. Chris Paul is starting to get healthy. He put up 21, 11, and 6 in Game 1. He had 17, 15, and 5 in Game 2. And Devin Booker, 27 points per game. Talk about burgeoning stars. He exemplifies that. So the Suns have been putting on a phenomenal show throughout the postseason. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We got Jackie Spiegel, Deputy Editor of Sporting News, coming up to talk NHL playoffs on Sports Map Radio Network.
It's there. You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Now let's get out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Very excited to be joined by someone who has quickly become a good friend of the program. That is Jackie Spiegel, Deputy Editor for Sporting News and also a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the Diehards.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So entering the series between the Bruins and the Islanders, I thought Boston was the more talented team, but as it played out, New York had the edge in most aspects, and even their advantage on the top line, that got negated once Trotz matched J.G. Pageau against them.
Yeah, well, you can never count out Barry Trotz. Barry Trotz is probably one of the biggest masterminds when it comes to coaching and to matching and pairings and figuring things out and how to break down the other teams, and he definitely pushed all the right buttons with his guys against that Bruins lineup. And I do agree with you. I do think Boston was the more skilled team, was the stronger team on paper, but obviously we all know that's not really how playoffs work. so it's always like who's hitting all the right marks at that time, and obviously it was the Islanders.
Yeah, and the Bruins certainly lost the war of attrition there. I don't think that they can run it back, being Boston. They've lost 2 years in a row in the second round. What do you think is the best course of action for them this offseason?
Well, I mean, there is a lot to like about that Bruins lineup. Obviously, Pastrnak, Marchand, Bergeron is, three super talented superstars on that lineup. There's always been the question in Boston about secondary scoring. Their defense has some really good players. Obviously, Charlie McAvoy is always in the Norris Trophy chat. But obviously, the big question for them right now is goaltending, right? Because, Tuukka got hurt. He was playing with I believe it was a torn labrum.
Correct.
In his hip. And,
yep.
You know, That's a pretty big deal. And if he has the surgery, if I remember hearing correctly, he could be out until, well, you know, December, I believe it was. November, December. So
yeah, he said December, January.
Yeah, so that's a pretty big pretty big question mark in terms of goal. And then obviously, you know, you have the expansion draft coming up. So who knows who they'll protect? Who knows who they'll allow to be picked up? It'll be an interesting to see what happens with that club. But they are always in the mix, right? Like the Bruins are always in the mix, regardless. And you know, there's no hesitation to say that they won't be in the mix next year again.
Certainly, and there also might be a shakeup in the front office. So it's going to be an interesting summer for the Boston Bruins. Back to the teams that are still alive. One of them, Jackie, I can't believe they're still going here, is Las Vegas, the Knights. They lost game two, but they took a team in Colorado that was a freight train to that point to overtime. Do you think that was the turning point in the series?
Well, first of all, I don't think anyone's surprised that Vegas is – I thought you were going to say Canadians, because that is definitely –
Oh, we're going to get to the Cinderella story of this postseason.
But I will say, I am not surprised at all that Vegas is in this. Not going to lie, they were actually my preseason pick to win the Stanley Cup this year.
Well done.
They were my pick all along to win the Cup this year. You know, I say it was my prediction from the preseason. They are my pick to win the Cup this year. I had them beating the Avalanche in seven games. You know, obviously losing the first two games is a crushing blow. But this, you have to remember, they literally... They tied the Avalanche in points. They just lost out, I believe it was, in regulation wins. And overtime wins, excuse me. So this is not a team that it should be surprising that they're there. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury is Marc-Andre Fleury. And even if he falters, you have Robin Leonard. You know, you have guys who have won the Cup on that team, and like Petrangelo. You have strong score. I mean, Mark Stone is probably one of the best defensive forwards in the game, and also a guy who can bury the puck. I mean, this is not, in my opinion, a team that anybody should be surprised about reaching this point. Honestly, my biggest takeaway from this is that I actually think playing Robin Leonard in game one was probably the most strategic moment in this series, because you gave Marc-Andre Fleury a break. You got Robin Leonard some action. He hadn't played, I think it was like for 2 months at that point, because he hadn't played, I think, since March. In my opinion, that was one of the smartest moves I've ever seen a coach make. He knew his team coming off of seven-game series against the Wild was not going to have it. He knew that Colorado was probably going to come out guns blazing because they were, you know, they've been sitting around for so long by that point. In my opinion, that was a throwaway game. He knew it was a throwaway game, and it was an incredibly smart move on his part for Pete DeBoer.
Jack, you made nothing but excellent points. The Knights are certainly a heavyweight in their own right. I can't help it. I looked at how impressive Colorado was, and I firmly expected them to come out of this matchup, but clearly not the case. And last week, we had Ryan Boulding from Mile High Sports on the show, and he said that his biggest concern for the Avalanche was that they didn't face adversity on the ice this season. And so, sure enough, they lost in four straight this round. Do you think they're a case of a young, talented team that's still learning how to win?
Oh, I think that's a good point. I think, you know, adversity is a word that gets tossed around a lot in hockey. Heard it a lot, especially in the last year. It's hard to gauge what's right and what's wrong with the Avalanche. Look, Nazem Kadri, once again, was not on the ice when his team was eliminated. Losing him kind of shifted things in that lineup. And I'm not sitting here and putting all the blame on him, all right? Absolutely not. Because in the end, he wasn't on the ice, and it was the team that was on the ice that did not win the games. But not losing him on that second line created a shift in the lineup, and they lost a lot of production on that second line. So that's one thing that maybe they don't have as much depth as we all think they do. You know, look, you can't argue with Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, some of those goals were just absolutely ridiculous that he scored in the postseason. you can't argue with Mikko Rantanen. You can't argue with Gabe Landeskog. I mean, they – and look, defensive-wise, right, you have Cale Makar. You know, they have – I mean, this is a team. You're right. This is a very young team, and I think that that still needs to be remembered. Yes, Nathan MacKinnon said that he's been in this – in the league, what was it, 9 years, and he hasn't done anything. Understandable, but he's not the only guy that's been in a league. I mean, Mike Gartner played how many years and never won a Stanley Cup, and he's – I think he's number two all-time in right-wing goal scored. So, you know, not everybody wins a Stanley Cup. It's exceptionally hard, and it's extremely difficult, and it's a long road. And anyone who's won one will tell you that. And I think that's something that needs to be remembered, is that there's a reason why there's only one team that wins it in the end. And who knows who's going to win it this year, but they, yeah, maybe they don't have, off the top of my head, I don't think there's anyone on that roster that has won a cup.
No, I don't think so. I can't think of
so
anyone either.
I will say that I think that having someone who's won a Stanley Cup in the room is critical to a team. I think we saw that in 2019 with the Flames, when they were the Western Conference champions and then faced a lot of adversity against the same Colorado team, where they lost in five games. And, you know, then they got Milan Lucic, who's definitely stepped up and helped push them a little further. But there's still that element of not having last season, I should, you know, in 2020, I should say, not obviously last. In 2021, the Flames did not go very far. But there's a lot to be said for having that someone who's been in the room and who has been on a team that's won. I mean, look, the Rangers in 94 got Marc Messier for that reason, because he was a leader and he pushed and he made the speeches. And it's more, sometimes it's more about what happens in the room than what happens on the ice. And I think that may be something critical for this team to look at in the coming season, is how do we add that kind of leadership and someone who kind of knows what it takes? And that might push them over the edge.
Yeah, I wonder if that's something that the front office is kicking themselves for not addressing during the season, before the campaign, whatever it may be. Perhaps they do look to rectify
I
that.
I mean, granted, granted, they do have Joe Sakic in the front office, but Joe Sakic is not going to be in the locker room on a daily basis. So
exactly.
Slightly different, but... Yeah.
And he's not on the ice with them either when they dealt with that adversity, against the Las Vegas Golden Knights, who draw the darlings of this year's playoffs, the Montreal Canadiens. What are your expectations for this series?
I mean, at this point, who knows, right? Like, who knows with the Montreal Canadiens, to be honest? Look, my only expectation coming out of this, or looking at this series, and I'm actually working on my preview right now, is that I honestly think it's going to be a low-scoring affair. I mean, look, you have two of the elite goaltenders in between the pipes in Carey Price and Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, it's going to be an absolute showdown between these two guys. And every goal is going to be absolutely critical in this series. I will say, though, I absolutely love watching Cole Caulfield play. I've been, you know... I hate to use the word fan, but I've definitely watched his game for a while now, playing at World Juniors, seen some stuff at Wisconsin. You know, I've talked to Tony Granato about him. He is elite. And why he didn't start this postseason for Montreal, I won't understand. But obviously, him coming in and getting it, being inserted into that lineup has just absolutely sparked this team. And it's been something to watch. This kid play hockey in the NHL.
And then the Islanders will match up with the Lightning. What does New York have to do to knock out the defending Stanley Cup champions?
Well, that's a tough one. I think, you know, it's going to be a difficult series for the Islanders, I think. Just because, you know, you think like, oh, if you stop, you know, Kucherov, well, that's great. But then you have Stamkos, then you have Braden Point, and you have Alex Killorn, and you have, you know, even that fourth line with Patty Maroon. I mean, like, this is not a team that is built with, you know, top six. This is a team that's built top to bottom with the intentions of winning a Stanley Cup. And, you know, obviously you look at Victor Hedman on the blue line, another Norris Trophy candidate again this year, or a finalist this year. And then Andre Vasilevsky. In my opinion, he should have been when the ballots are revealed, he should definitely get some votes for the Hart Trophy, in my opinion. I mean, he won 31 or 32 of the team's, like, 37 wins or something crazy, like some crazy number like that. They're going to need to play their game. And I'm sure Barry Trotz has probably the best game plan going into this series. It's going to be a lot because it's just they're going to keep rolling out lines. You know, John Cooper's just going to keep rolling out his four lines that can all do what needs to be done in game. It's going to be a battle. But I will say that the one thing for the Islanders is on their side. And I've never been to Amalie Arena, so I will say that. But the one thing that will definitely be on the Islanders' side is the Nassau Coliseum and the fans. I don't know if you've ever been there, Bobby, but it is rocking. It is loud. It is shake. I mean, just the sound from the fans is just something else. And I think that definitely helps push these players along as well.
I've never been, but that energy, it comes through the TV. It's so transparent.
Yeah.
And the Collie, it lives to see another day. It's going to another series here.
It really does.
That gym is going to be rocking. There's no doubt about it. Jackie Spiegel, thank you so much for taking the time. And so I want to give you the floor now to go ahead. You talked about the playoff preview that you're working on there, to give a plug to any social media handles, any other work you might have that you want to go ahead and promote.
Just sportynews.com is where you can find stuff. Jackie Spiegel 93 is my Twitter handle. Sportynews.com, and then sportynews.com/CA, which is our Canadian portal. Lots of NHL content we'll have coming up, you know, obviously going into the Stanley Cup Finals as well. And with the draft, the expansion draft, and free agency, lot happening these days.
Follow her on Twitter. Read her work. You'll be a better and smarter fan for it. Once again, Jackie Spiegel, thank you so much for taking the time tonight.
Thank you.
All right, when we come back, what's in store for the New York Knicks? What's the latest on the Stephon Gilmore front? We've got a gambling corner coming up with Connor Mack, a sports handicapper for Pub Sports Radio. And we're also going to dive into the MLB's latest scandal with Michael Bradburn from The Score. Stick with us here on the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky here with Jack McGraw. Jack, real quick, I want to get your favorite take you've heard so far tonight.
Favorite one, free agent destination for Atlanta. I think they could be really good. My least favorite, not enough love for the Knights.
That's fair. I underestimated them. I thought Colorado would steamroll them. They did not. Coming up next, the latest on the Stephon Gilmore front. Stick with us on the Diehard Sports Map Radio Network.